Welcome back to We Got Goosebumps, a podcast dedicated to the landmark horror series for children written by R.L. Stine back in the 90s. I'm your failed science experiment, Dylan.
And I'm your very sick aunt, Travis. I'm excited to be here, Dylan, even though I'm your very sick aunt.
I did not see what you gave yourself, and I'm... That's what you decide. Of all the characters and things in this book, you decide to focus on very sick aunt.
I'm your very sick aunt.
I feel like it was Edna. It was something like that. It was a very Far Side cartoon matronly woman name. Like
it was Eleanor. Edna.
Eleanor.
Yeah. Aunt Eleanor. Aunt Eleanor. Yeah. Aunt or aunt. What are you more of, an aunt or an aunt? What do you do up there in the Northeast?
In the Northeast, I don't really listen to people talk around me. I always just say aunt because I don't want to get stuck in a who's on first skit ever. And just like maybe I'm at a picnic with all of my aunts and there's also aunts. And then you get into the, I don't want right. to have that discussion with everybody. It's just like, oh no, there's aunts at the picnic. And you know, that's prime fodder for dad jokes.
And that sounds like an R.L. Stine book premise right there.
Yeah. That is Shocker on Shock Street, or what was that? What's the one with the giant ant on the cover?
Yeah, Ants on Aunt Street or something like okay, that. Correct.
Are we not even allowed to talk about the other books? Is this...
Yeah, we're pretending they haven't come out yet. That's the way this podcast operates.
You should have told me that like August... 6 months ago.
No, it's fine. Other books exist.
Oh my God, we're stuck in one of your Time Warp projects for just ever,
yes,
is what you're telling me.
That's what I'm all about.
You have tricked me.
You into it, yes. We've gone back. And in fact, right now, number two in this whole series, Dylan, stay out of the basement. Get out of there. There's no reason to go down there. Oh, stay out of the basement, Dylan. That's what I'm going to tell you, because obviously that's the title of this book. I live most of my life in a basement. I can't stay out of it. I live down here. It's where my office is. It's where my game room is. And it's also where my cat lives. We have two cats and we have to keep them separated. And my cat lives in the basement with me. So I'm not staying out of the basement. I love the basement. You can't tell me what to do, R.L. Stine.
I never had a basement as a child. Never, never, ever.
I didn't have one as a child.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to kill the whole conversation by talking about my deprived life as a... Not an orphan. I was going to say orphan, but that's not
yeah, I'm pretty sure you had parents.
True.
We were both basementless lads, which is interesting. I kind of had a fascination with basements as a kid, though. I think because I didn't have one. Like, when I would go to a friend's house and they had a basement, I'd be like, can we go down in there? Like, there's just junk. There's just junk down there. Like, can we still
go? It just smells like old paper and wet. That's what it smells like down there.
I was always fascinated by basements that had the outer door, too. Like, in... with like the hatch door?
Where you have to fling open the doors, get grandma down in the cellar before the twister's coming and it's an F5. Helen Hunt's not here to save us. Go!
Right. And that's the one basement I always think of when I think of basements. It's the one Helen Hunt had as a child before she got swept up in that tornado.
As an adult, I would not want a way to enter my house that involves just big, large swing doors right. that could be easily chopped through by an axe murderer. Like, I don't get the... I understand that there's reasons behind... But no, I want a steel bolt door. Mm-hmm. Just a steel door leads into my basement, both euphemistically and literally.
Sure. No, I'm with you on that.
But what's funny is, when I was younger... I was fascinated by basements because of books like Stay Out of the Basement or in Stephen King's It, which I read at 12, which is not a good age to read a book about a child murdering clown, that your parents can't see. That was the part that horrified me, was like, oh, I could be murdered in front of my parents and they would see nothing. But anyway, the whole like prologue to that story is literally about... the little brother going down into the basement and he's describing the smells of the basement and like how scary it is to go down and it's like, I want to see this. Like, what is this scary thing that people have in their houses? Like, I was just fascinated with them on that kind of level. Like it would be on the same level as like, oh, I get to go see a wolf at the zoo and I can go see this basement that might have like anything.
Could have anything
could be in a basement.
Anything. Oh,
and And also, like, basements were, like, oh, you might find old comics down there, or, like, mm-hmm. like fun things, too. Like, that was... Although attics were usually more reserved for fun stuff in kids' literature, I think, rather than basements. Like, you find the cool stuff in the attic and the things that want to kill you in the basement.
Right, which is...
As in real life.
Maybe that's some type of, you know, Christian symbology that we've carried with us, you know? The good things are up top and the evil things are down below. Or it's just human nature. But at any rate, I'm with you. I didn't have an attic either. I grew up in a two-story home that it was weirdly shaped, but there were no nooks and crannies on either end, top or bottom. The house I'm in now, though, does have an attic, and it's full of bees and bird shit. So I don't go up there either. I prefer the basement. I'm more of a basement guy as an adult. Well, you know, I talked a little bit about a creepy basement that I experienced last episode, so there's no need to repeat that story. But that would be the only creepy basement story that I have.
Well, I can tie this story pretty heavily into my own my own childhood, because my dad, from when I was at my earliest age, was working on getting his PhD in microbiology. So I had a mad scientist dad to some degree.
That's awesome.
Who he kept like weird computer things that I don't know where he harvested them from, but like these giant blocks of old style terminals that had these weird dials on them and stuff. They didn't do anything. He harvested like circuit boards out of them. That's the only reason why we had them.
Is this your make believe like, dad? Because you were an orphan, remember?
Yeah, that's right. This is my the dad I always wanted. He even during when I went to elementary school, we had a like a Halloween fair thing at night every year, and he was in charge of the haunted house portion, and so he just did up the whole mad scientist thing, and he brought lab coats home from work that he covered in fake blood, and
what?
He'd go down to the specialty counter at the store and buy pig brains and put them in a jar so they float in the water.
Dude, this explains so much about you. If any of this is even true.
Oh, yeah. And like, my both... Listen, it's only going to get better as the podcast goes on. Like, what will I tell you about the mansion and my stables? My Nana. All five of my Nanas.
Mm, and those giant ants that ate them. Oh, dear.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
But, no, so this very much was... You struck a chord, I'll say, with me.
So did he do any of this at work? Did he have a shed at least, or a workshop?
No, he was more working on like robotics and stuff and computers. Like he was. Don't look at the math too much, but he was in high school, like in the early 80s, so he was like big on like when home computers started really becoming a thing, and so he kind of fell into that.
Oh, nice. Bit of a whiz kid
there.
Very
beginning. Yeah.
Very cool. Might I ask what he's up to these days? Still building robots and trying to create a plant-based monster?
I mean, he's actually closer to you right now. So, he's out in the hills around your parts. So just,
It's a good place for a creepy plant recluse to hang out. So I don't blame him. Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Just be careful, right?
Sure, sure. Yeah. No, I don't leave home without my chainsaw. So
that's actually a terribly ineffective weapon, because like people are actually too wet for chainsaws. Like they're made to go through, like there's a fair bit of moisture in trees, obviously, but we're mostly like a human body is they would clog up almost immediately.
That's a weird fact for you to just know. And I'm not going to press you on it, because like you said, we got a lot of podcast episodes to go. I'd like to hear more about that in our upcoming chainsaw episode, if we ever get to it.
We also haven't even started this book. Let's start the book.
Yeah, well, we got to talk. Yeah, to start the book, we have to get through the cover first.
Oh, well, that is starting the book.
Technically. There is some interesting things about this cover. First of all, so for a lot of Goosebumps books, they had reprints. So this one came out in 1992. There was a reprint in 2003 and another one in 2011. Each one of those covers is fairly different. So unlike, what was the last book we did there? The House of Welcome to Dead House.
Welcome to Dead House.
That cover
not
stays.
Not the Dead House.
Just old, regular old Dead House. That book had three covers. They were all basically the same. This one, all three are very different. Now, we talked about in our intro episode, we like the cover artist for the bulk of the covers from the original run, which was Tim Jacobus. He did a good number of those. We talked about that in the old intro episode. But the first edition for Stay Out of the Basement, and again, this is the second book in the entire series. Maybe the plan was to use a different cover artist for each print, something like that. But Jim Thiessen did Stay Out of the Basement. I really like that cover because it kind of gives me the Swamp Thing vibe, like literally Swamp Thing is coming up from out of the basement. Got the hand, green hand with plant matter, creaking the door open ever so slightly. A dark void extends, you know, between the door frame and the door itself. And you know it's creepy down there. I like that cover a lot, Dylan.
I talked about this a little bit last time, but in terms of like the cover to Welcome to Deadhouse would not have grabbed me as much as one of the other covers. I'm pretty sure that this was the first Goosebumps book I read. Pretty sure. Like, I didn't get the first one. I had, like, the second one. And I think I even told you at one point while I was reading this book, there's sentences that are burned into my brain. And they're not even, like, the exciting sentences. It's like, oh, yeah, I definitely remember that Josh really likes to run and catch the frisbee. Like, why is that stuck in my brain? And it's not Josh. Josh was the last book. But anyway, you might as well have been Josh. But this cover is such a classic, like, EC horror comic pulp, just very pulpy cover, and just very reminiscent of something you'd see on those kind of those magazines. And I just, it makes me happy. It's just in terms of just pure nostalgia, it's I really do think that was my first Goosebumps book.
Yeah, dude, that cover friggin' rules. And again, Tim Jacobus does most of the covers for the original series, but Jim Thiessen steps in, does this one. But then they do a reprint in 2003, and it's actually done by Tim Jacobus, but I don't so much like that cover. It spoils way too much of the book, in my opinion. You've got, the mad scientist with, you know, which is the dad. You know, we're going to spoil the book, but this spoils the book outright because you got what you assume is the dad as a scientist down in a lab, down in the basement with branches and limbs and roots coming out of the head. I don't know. It's not that it's bad. It just, and I think you said this to me weeks ago when we were talking about this. Again, it just spoils a little too much.
You find out pretty quickly that the dad is a botanist, so seeing a monstrous hand with leaves on it on the front doesn't spoil that, like, the dad's the thing, because this looks like a monster, and this actually isn't what the most dangerous plant looks like. The problem with the most dangerous plant is, again, spoilers, that it looks like a person, not this horrifying monster. So it misleads you even into what the danger actually is in the book to some degree. I do want to point out, just take a little sidestep, I don't know if you looked at any of the international covers.
No.
On this page. If you scroll down, great audio, I'm sorry, but the French cover for this book is horrifying. It depicts a child in a way too tight yellow shirt in some form of room that might be a basement, but he's surrounded by green tentacles that are like wrapped around his throat, and his eyes are bugged out, and his mouth is just like, please don't strangle me to death, Mr. Vines, but probably louder.
Yeah, that is, I just found it as you were talking about it. Yeah, that is nuts. I don't dislike it, but I definitely understand why it was not released.
The American
States.
Yeah, this is genuinely a very disturbing cover.
Yeah, man. There's a Dutch cover that's similar too. That's, I don't know. I had no idea there was an international cover repository here. This is fairly complete. Pretty fascinating to look through. Holy crap.
Yeah, I think moving forward, we might have to actually take a look at some of these international, because most of them are pretty similar. I don't know what this one is, though. Oh, the UK one is just weird.
It is so weird. It's just a boy with
I'm going to try and describe this.
Please,
I'm going to try and describe it. It is a human face, but it's pink. It is a very pink, smiling human face looking up from a halo of leaves. and it seems to be coming out of a pile of green. They look like frog's eggs or something, like just giant mounds of green eyeballs, goo.
Yeah.
But the face looks like, it kind of looks like a clown that might be like, it is what it is. Like, that's the expression on this guy's face. Like, it's a mime who's just like, boy, some days at work, what are you going to do? Like, except he's not going to say it. He's expressing it non-verbally.
You know, this might be a reference that only you and I get, but it reminds me of one of our favorite podcasters, Marcus Parks.
Yeah. He would also have that expression if he was being subsumed mm-hmm. by a giant
exactly
green thing. That is... Oh, and the Goosebumps logo is disgusting.
I don't like that cover at all.
It looks infected.
I stand by that the U.S. cover that Jim Thiessen drew is the best of the bunch. And we're not even done describing the U.S. releases, because in 2011, they did another reprint. And they tried to update the look and feel of Goosebumps books in general. It doesn't sit with me. I'm nostalgic for the original. But this kind of harkens back to that original. It's from a different angle. And it's drawn by Brandon Dorman. I'm not sure if they do any other books in the series, but it's basically just an updated version, like a more detailed version of the original. But that original, with the hand creeping up between the door and the door frame, still the best. And I might say one of the best in the entire series.
I think you went a little harder into the rereads. You're a little further along in the series than I am, and you're the one who's collecting all of our materials for this, so you're a little more familiar with the covers. But I feel like there's still some winners down the line that might at least give this one a run for its money. But this is a classic.
No, you ain't wrong. You ain't wrong. I think when it comes to being creepy, this one's good. There are a few that are coming, especially right around the 20s, that are stylistically zany and colorful and interesting. This one actually is creepy to me. I could see this on not only a Goosebumps book for kids, I could see this on, you know, an 80s pulpy horror movie, you know? Like, it kind of spans, it doesn't tie itself to a kid's book, and I feel like a lot of the later covers are specifically kids' yeah. book covers. Which
no,
is
I think some of my less favorite covers are a little more kiddie in some ways. Like Shocker on Shock Street is probably mm-hmm. one of my least favorite covers, if I can say such a thing. One last thing that I have to say about this specific cover. I want, if you go again to our fun page that we're on, if you scroll down to right above the trivia section, you can actually see the cover art before it was processed for the cover. So it's like just the clean art. Look at the coloring on the third cover. Look at that, how that looks compared to how it looks in the final edition.
Yeah, I was using that to figure out who actually drew it. And
doesn't that look much better?
That is,
because it's not as cartoony. Yeah, it's a little more realistic. It's a little creepier. Like, I like this version more than what was on the final cover design.
Yeah, no, I agree with
you. I think
stylistic words they threw on there detract from it.
And I think they flattened it a little. Yeah, so I think they wrecked some actually decent art. Well, not wrecked. It's a preference thing. We don't like as much as the original, but
it happens. Yeah. It also says now with bonus features. I wonder what those bonus features were.
It's probably in 2011. My guess is it's probably just something from Mr. Stein at the beginning, saying like, "Boy, plants, huh?"
Plants.
He doesn't even sound like that. I hear him at the beginning of every audiobook. He reads the little intro. He actually reads the back of the book to you, basically. So I get to hear how he reads those little outros. And it's helpful, too, because the punctuation on those back things don't always make sense when you read them out loud.
It's true. A lot of ellipsi. All right. Well, let's get into the plot. Because we got a whole book to get through. We've got 21 chapters, which means we have upwards of 20 cliffhangers to build up to and dissipate back to back to back. So, Dylan, you want to kick us off here in chapter one of Stay Out of the Basement?
So we start off Stay Out of the Basement with our two main characters who are, as is pretty typical for an R.L. Stein book, two siblings who may or may not like each other. We're set up with Margaret and Casey Brewer.
Mm. The Brewers, back-to-back older sister protagonist out of the gate in this Goosebumps series.
Oh, not...
scrappy, annoying little brothers.
Except this time there's no... It's not from her perspective. Like, the first book was entirely from Amanda's perspective. And in this case, Margaret, like, it's all third person, which lets Arlstein do something a little cool. And in the later chapters, they wasn't able to do in Welcome to Dead House. But we can talk about that when we get there, where he switches perspectives. But yeah, so we're started off with brother and sister. They're a little complaining, a little upset. They don't get to see their dad so much because he's working from home all the time. Again, I don't know if this is a slight dig at Arlstein at himself, because he was obviously a dad who worked from home. But there's a lot of complaining about dad working from home throughout this book, and it starts off right off the bat.
Yeah, he's down in the basement slaving away on something. Dad just does science. He's down there with his plants and his weird machines. Kids don't really understand what he's up to. They just know that he's down there doing important work because they just moved. They just moved here because dad's going. He's teaching at Polytech, probably a real college. Cali Polytech.
I think he's left it vague enough that, yes, it is probably a real college, but not one you could pinpoint on a map. Oh, it's in California? And he's wearing a Dodgers cap, so that's the bottom half of California.
That narrows it down a little bit, huh? Yeah. One interesting detail that doesn't really ever come up again, I don't think, is that Margaret is called Fatso by other kids, even though she's thin.
Yeah, it's an ironic...
Like that was like an ironic nickname.
I don't think kids do ironic nicknames, to be honest. I think if you're fat as a kid, they call you fat. And if you're skinny, then they call you, like, skinny. Like, I was made fun of for being skinny, but they didn't call me fat. So they're like, you're a real fat guy, huh? And it's like, no, we're not a 1940s slapstick. Like, that's not what...
It's like, oh, that's not how this works. Yeah. Yeah, so, you know... Like you said, there's a bit of friction. I don't say friction, but Casey, the little brother, is disappointed. He wants to play frisbee with dad, but dad's got to go in the basement and do his Polytech stuff. So kids are pretty bummed. Even one of the saddest lines in the beginning of the book, page two even, Margaret says, he doesn't even call me princess anymore, which makes me sad, Dylan, because my daughter, 3 and a half only, she's not quite Margaret's age, but she pretends she's a princess all the time and demands that I call her a princess. I'll never stop calling her a princess, no matter how busy I get in the basement. I promise.
Well, what's funny is you've highlighted that as a sad moment, but Casey immediately says, you hate that nickname. She's like, that's not the point, all right? Yeah. The point is that's not dad.
I was selective. Yeah. I was a little bit selective, but it tugged at me.
But I feel like they're a little bit less in each other's faces than maybe Josh and Amanda were. Cause Josh seemed like he was out of control. I mean, he was being disrespectful to Compton. Like, just he was howling in the car. Like, he was basically a second dog. Let's be honest. He's lucky he didn't get killed. But I feel like Casey's a little bit more of just being a brat. Like, in general, he's a brat.
Yeah.
Who really loves Frisbee.
Loves Frisbee. And now, I thought about this. I can't remember what yard games I played in 92. I didn't have siblings my age, so, you know, I mostly played Nintendo. But there's a lot of references to Frisbee and kites in this book. And I'm like, I don't remember 1992 that well, but I don't know if kids were doing any of that stuff. I think it was things that we were told to go do, and then we didn't do it. But anyway, point is, they're playing outside. They go inside for a drink. It's a hot day out there in California, I suppose. But they see dad's basement door ajar, and they're like, let's go see what dad's up to. It's pretty, I mean, you saw the cover of the book. Looks like a place you might want to go down there and snoop around in. Mm-hmm. But they're stopped short. It gets pretty rowdy early in this book because they peer down the steps and guess who's peering back up at them angrily, kind of with a green hue. Can't see very well. It's a dimly lit basement, but is he dripping blood off that lab coat? And then title of the book right here in the first chapter. Dylan, take the honors. What does dad scream up the steps, these youngins?
Well, let me just let me get the audience ready for this and just make sure that I'm a proper distance. Stay out of the basement!
Yep. And that's why the kids shit their pants. Dum, dum, dum.
It's a weird cliffhanger. It's a weird cliffhanger. Because we have what seems like, oh, they're about to die? Two weeks later. Like, it's not even a follow-up of them skittering out of the basement. It's time has passed. Mom's sister's gotten worse. Things are, the marriage is on the rocks. Everything's looking grim for the Brewer. I might be reading too much into it again.
Yeah, Aunt Eleanor's sick at a hospital in Tucson. We don't know what's wrong with Aunt Eleanor, but it sounds pretty serious because, like, later in the book, surgeries go wrong. She's not doing well. Mom's gone for weeks.
Yeah, it's...
Poor Aunt Eleanor.
It's treated as such a... almost a footnote, because it's literally just to get Mom out the door, but it's just like, is she okay? Like, I feel like she's going to be in long-term care. Like, the first operation didn't work. Like... there was already going to be more operations, I feel like, when you say first, but the first one didn't work. Do you do the second
one? What were we removing from this woman? No, you're right. And it's interesting, as an adult, I keyed in on that and was like, oh God, I hope we get an update on this, on Aunt Eleanor. We kind of do, but as a kid, I would have never cared about that part.
No, and I had a similar moment when I was... It's later, but it's probably too much of a minor thing to bring up at the point anyway, where she's talking to her mom on the phone, and at one point Margaret says something or is thinking like, oh, why'd I bring up all the stuff about dad? Like, now she's like, she's worried about Aunt Eleanor. It's like, oh yeah, it's really rough when families are, but as a kid, I was just been like, no, you need to get out of that basement. But as an adult, it's just like, oh, yeah, it's really stressful when someone's in the family. I'm like, oh, but the state, the, she's at home. Like, being a kid in this situation is just really rough. It's just so much out of the headspace. Like, you can't help but kind of layer in the more adult viewpoint in these books and just be like, boy, if my husband had, like, been fired from his job, disappeared in the basement for months, I would be very concerned about so many things.
Doubt.
There'd be counseling. But here it's just like, dads in their basements.
Silly dad. Yeah, it's such a normal thing. 2 weeks passed because the last time we heard about dad, he was dripping blood, looked kind of green, and was yelling at everyone. And then 2 weeks go by, and I guess they hadn't seen much of dad, although he does have to take mom to the airport, and he appears from the basement with his right hand bandaged. Maybe that's what that blood was about. I don't know.
How long are you bandaged up, buddy? 2 weeks.
Yeah. 2 weeks seems long. That had to be a pretty deep wound.
When you held that bowl in your hands and it made you angry and you decided to destroy it with a single clench of your fist.
I wish that was the case. I was just bad at washing dishes. Honest to God. I hit my cut was on the outside of my hand, which is how you know it wasn't because I was scrubbing it incorrectly.
Wait, it was on the outside of your hand? I thought it was on your palm.
No, I got the back of my knuckle. I was scrubbing really hard and it snapped and my scrubber fist went right into the cracked edge of the bowl.
I am bewildered. I've just had my mind blown by that. And that happened, what, a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
Like, the back of...
It still hurts when it rains. It was a rough wound. We don't have to get into it.
No, we don't. But we do get to meet a third child.
Oh, yeah. Diane. Oh, she really something. Diane is one of those kids that you're forced to be friends with just because they lived close. You would never congregate with this person in any other scenario. But because they're the same age, maybe you rode the same bus or they lived the street over, they're always at your place, always hanging out. Because Diane, maybe it was just, I read the book and then I touched up some of my memories with a quick listen of the audiobook in spots. And it might be the audiobook narrator just made Diane sound so insufferable. She's just constantly whiny and just eating all their food. Oh, Diane. Do you have a friend like Diane?
Yes. No, you know what? Yes, I did. At that age, there was there's always like a neighborhood kid that your parents wish didn't come over. And just like, you know, every time John comes over, we're missing like change from the change drawer. Can you not invite him over anymore? Like... It's that kind of kid, like, not necessarily the worst kid, never was, like, necessarily a bully, but just kind of like, where did my Michael Jordan baseball card go? I was going to show it to him, and now it's gone. I must have lost it. Must have lost it.
Yeah, and that's what you've thought all of this time. Well, Diane, you know, we talked about Casey being a brat, and he's just really impressionable sometimes, so he's obviously wanted to go check out this basement Dad's forbidden them to go check out, but Diane comes over. She happens to be a science nerd. You know, she's Margaret's friend. She's like Dylan. She's like Dylan's dad. She just wants to go see plants and science. And so she encourages them all. She's like, we should go downstairs and look at all your dad's cool stuff. And Margaret's kind of like, oh, I don't know if that's a great idea. But Diane talks them into it because she's Diane. And Casey's like, yeah, that's cool. Let's go. And so Margaret, Casey, and Diane go stumbling down the basement that just last chapter, they're bloody dad, bloody green dad, in the dim light of the basement, told them to stay out of. Uh-oh, what's down there? Dum, dum, dum. Chapter 3.
This is really, you know, it's less of a cliffhanger, more of a, you step off the bottom step of the basement and you don't realize that there's actually another step. And that it's more like, yes, that. It's not a cliffhanger. It's more like, oh, God dang it, I'll have to catch myself before I fall.
Yeah, but and hey, guess what? There's plants down there.
And a lot of all plants. New. It's very tropical, too. Just hot and muggy. This is one of the sections that I could feel the book. Just the sweaty stickiness of these jungle plants. They're not the weirdest plants. They look, they don't know what they are. But they start to notice, like, things don't feel right. And Casey decides that's the time. Show off what he's got. Give out 2 free tickets to the gun show. And that's just rips right. his shirt off and just like, ladies, you know where I am. Except one of them's a sister, so he doesn't actually say that. You need to, like, remember the book we're talking about. But yeah, he just
I like
rips
the idea
off
the shirt. That we're building every young boy in this Goosebumps series, I'm going to make into a redneck.
Oh,
so he's just taking his shirt off.
I mean, that is us. That was us as children. Was I see Casey in my head. I knew, you know, 10, 15 other boys in my class just like Casey, just fucking rambunctious as hell and running off around without a shirt on. Probably doesn't have shoes on most of the time, too.
Got to take that shirt off. No shirt, no shoes. I was going to use, there's a nice little paragraph here that describes these plants down here. It says, the plants, in fact, resembled jungle plants. Leafy vines and tall, tree-like plants with long, slender tendrils, fragile-looking ferns, plants with gnarled, cream-colored roots poking up like bony knees from the soil. Man, I tell you, that R.L. Stine can really paint a picture.
And again, I think I don't, as a child, I missed out on a lot of the descriptive stuff, which I feel maybe I shouldn't admit on a podcast like this, because then it's just saying like, hey, R.L. Stine, when I was the reading age for your books, I just kind of skimmed them and didn't pick up any of the details. So I don't know who you were writing. You're writing them actually for 37-year-old me, who's actually picking up how eerie this basement is and just like the different references he's pulling in from different horror things from over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But it just feels very much like the, you know, the Cronenberg's Fly with the 2 glass booths that are being set up, or even the original Fly. Just a very sinister, weird basement. I would love to describe this next scene, because this is 100% something I definitely did as a child. Because he sees these big glass booths in the basement, and he's just like, you know what? I'm a child. Dangerous thing. Hand. And just touches it. Just right off the get. A, that's me now as an adult. Like, if I see like a bear, an actual bear, I will try. My wife will drag me away from it, but I will go up to that bear and I will put hands on it, because I just need to, you know.
Put hands on that bear.
And he puts his hand on that glass booth and he just starts hollering and shaking and just, he's clearly being electrocuted. If you saw Jurassic Park, which came out 2 years after this, that scene where Tim gets zapped off the fence and just flies off and smoked. And
right.
Yeah. That's what's happening right here. He's dead.
He's dead. All right. Well, let's see. Let's see. Dum, dum, dum. Chapter 4. He's faking it. He was faking it to get a rise out of the girls, just like Dylan continues to do to this day. Ah, you and Casey, with your shirts off, always upsetting the girls, I tell you. So to get him back, Diane and Margaret just hold him down and tickle the shit out of him. They're like, yo, this is all we got right now. So we're just going to hold you down and tickle you.
Oh, that's, man, he's going to develop an interesting kink about that in about 10, 15 years.
He might do it. The tickle fest is interrupted by moaning noises. What? Not his. No, these are from another part of the room. And the plants get all weird and snake-like. Everything's kind of coming alive down there. It's like their presence has just stirred up the plants, and they get the groaning and breathing. And
I had a unique experience today, for me personally, which is I heard a fish hissing in anger, like it was angry, and it was like making a hissing noise. And I did not know that.
It's weird because you work in a bank. When did you come in contact with a
fish? Oh, I spend a lot of time watching videos while I'm working. So these fishermen had caught like a wolf fish. I posted this in your Discord. You'd know what I'm talking about if you.
I remember now. Yeah. Yes.
I was just like, oh, I don't. I did not know that fish growled or hissed. That's a weird thing. So like just thinking of plants hissing is such on the next level over for me. Like, oh, if a fish hisses, then I guess a plant could like. Like, I don't know.
I guess with their big plant lungs, you know how they do. Yeah, it's interesting way to describe it. The kids are like, well, that's enough for us. Plants are just supposed to grow very slowly and be still unless the wind's blowing. And these appear to be very alive and making noise.
Well, clearly they're not familiar. We're going to get out of here. With the myriad species of carnivorous plants that exist in many environments that have low nutrient qualities in the soil. So they have to take their nutrients. You're giving me a look like you're going to cut all of this.
You're just like your father. You're just like your father. Anyway, Diane gets out of there. Diane leaves. She goes, well, I've had enough. I got you guys down here. And honestly, it was pretty cool, but I'm out. I'm Diane. She always leaves, and when she leaves a room, she says, I'm Diane. That's the worst thing about her.
If you're a kid and you see plants that are breathing, like they're not in danger at this point, would you leave or would you be, I need to, because I'm trying to think of how I would have been as a kid and just been, would I have stayed because these are really cool looking plants all of a sudden?
You know, it's an interesting question because this occurred to me as well. And if it were just groaning and breathing, I might stick around. Just because I think it's interesting that they could be alive and maybe they could talk and then I'd have a friend. But they're also described as having tendrils that are snake-like and kind of moving and slithering. And that's the part where I'm like, I don't really want it to get a hold of me. Oh, I'll probably just go back upstairs.
That was the saddest thing I think I've heard today.
Ah, well, it gets worse. So they decide to leave the basement. And, you know, they're not supposed to be down there, Dylan. The whole book's predicated on not going into this godforsaken room of this house to stay out of here. It's just plants. Then, man, they get back up there. Dad's blue station wagon, which, you know, it's funny. Up until probably 92, actually, around the time that these books came out, we had two station wagons. Big old National Lampoon's vacation-ass station wagons. We had one that worked sometimes that we used for parts for our better one that we had. And Dad drove them in shifts to give them each attention. Anyway, our colors were rust and white, but Dad in this story has a blue one. He comes up the driveway and the kids are like, oh no, Dad's home, is the basement door shut? Well, sure, the basement door shut, but there's something worse that has happened.
Casey. Every time I hear Casey, I think of Stacy's mom. I'm glad Diane's gone, because every time I hear the name Diane, I think of Jack and Diane, and that song gets stuck in my head. So I'm glad that's gone. But he remembers the fool, the stupid fool, that he left his shirt, his beautiful shirt, on the floor of that basement, and he needs to get it.
I know. And as a little redneck boy, I know it was a Richard Petty shirt. I know it was an STP-43 red, white, and blue t-shirt from NASCAR. I know it was.
Oh, yeah. I don't care that they say they're from California. They're talking about like Piedmont, North Carolina to me. Like, all right, yeah. Weather's always nice in Durham. Like, but
all the little boys are rednecks. That's the way we're doing it.
So Casey's just like, I can't go out there with my farmer tan, and just books it down the stairs to go get a shirt, and leaves us upstairs with Margaret, who's basically doing the waiting game and doing the panicky. It's a whole chapter of like, what's dad doing? He's still talking to the neighbor. Where's Casey? What's he doing? Why is it taking him so long? Literally. And while she's saying this, she's like, no, seriously, what is taking so long? It's down the stairs. Like, how big is this basement? And well, it looks like dad's coming back. He's done talking to the neighbor. Neighbor's a, he's just like Diane. Let's be honest. Bit of a chatterbox. Kind of rude. Takes up dad's time. Doesn't take his food though. So, but he's coming back.
Yeah.
And what is taking Casey so long in that basement?
I don't know, but you're right. Chapter five, we breezed right through it. Dump, dump, dump. Chapter six. Now, this is the part of the point that you were making where it switches perspectives a little bit, right?
Yeah. And now we're, for the very first time in the G-Bumps, I mean, it's the second book, so whatever. Moving on. We
commemorate every point.
Exactly. We commemorated our first Compton, and we'll commemorate our first point of view change in the book. And now we actually see what exactly is taking Casey so long in this basement. It can't be that big of a basement, right? Like, they're in earthquake country.
I don't know.
So, like...
That's true. They're in earthquake country, and I don't know, though. They always describe, like, the plants kind of... I kind of pictured it in this, like, deep labyrinth of aisles of plants for some reason. Like, just because everybody gets lost down here.
Almost like the warehouse in, like, at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, it seems like it's much bigger than it has any right to be. But really, if you think about it, they only describe, like, three places in the basement. It's the closet, the booths, and just the basements filled with plants. It's probably not even...
You know what? When you were a kid, some rooms were just big. Did you ever go back into your elementary school after you were an adult and you were like, what? This used to be the biggest building on earth. And now I can touch both walls standing here?
I walked past the little chairs and desks and things. And just like, this is just like smaller than my high school classrooms were. Like, this is insane.
I know.
The ceilings are 4 feet tall. It's like Hobbiton. But, what takes Casey so long is he gets snagged. It turns out they were right to leave earlier. So the plants are capable of grabbing.
Yeah, they tackled poor Casey there at the 45-yard line, and Margaret comes down the steps just in time to help get him free. What a good older sister she is, trying to help her brother out so he doesn't get in trouble by dad. You know, I might have been the kind of kid to just leave my sibling down there to teach him a lesson. That's what you get for goofing off in the basement. You get caught by dad, now you get grounded and I get to play with all your stuff. Which might explain earlier why I said I needed more friends. I went through them pretty quickly. But
yeah, if that was your first approach to, guys, we're in trouble. Wait, where'd Trav go?
Yeah, I'm gone.
Trav?
Screw you guys.
Guys, they're over here. They were the ones who broke into the basement.
Yeah, man.
Take them away.
My strategy as a child was always to side with the adults. Side with authority. Get on their good side.
Oh, God. You were like a prison trustee. You were probably like on the playground, just like living the good life. Got a pack of smokes that Mrs. Jones in second grade slipped you while the principal wasn't looking. You're like, you're doling out the smokes to your boys. Like, that was a good life, you know, on the inside.
That's right, man. I was just starved for the attention of adults. But... Before the kids could get, I told you it gets sad. Before the kids could get back upstairs,
Jesus Christ,
Dad was already at the top, glaring back down at them. So the two times that we've seen Dad, he's been standing at the bottom of the steps, glaring up, and now he's at the top of the steps, glaring down. And as you can imagine, with Casey and Margaret down in the basement, he's none too pleased that they're down there. Dum dum dum. Chapter seven.
Well, we get the worst possible outcome of a scolding from your dad. And that is, I'm not angry. Just disappointed.
Oh, God. I don't see that.
I thought I could trust you guys to be more adult, but I guess if you want Act 10, you're Act 10. We'll just have to take certain privileges away.
Oh, don't say that. No. Come on. I still want to watch PG-13
movies. And maybe
one
day... One day, if you feel like acting like an adult and taking some responsibility and helping out your mother and I, then maybe you can grow into some of these responsibilities. But for now, I think it's better that we take them away.
Are you saying we can't have that puppy? You know, I was just thinking, you know what would really ruin this house? A cat just digging in those plants and pooping. That'd have been rough.
Oh, God. And spraying.
Yeah.
Just that.
Oh, that'd have been amazing. Of course, the cat would have probably been eaten in the first chapter by the plant. But, again, R.L. Stein.
No, we don't kill pets anymore.
Won't make that mistake again. But, yeah, Dad's only disappointed. I always liked it when my parents were disappointed and not angry. That made for a better evening. But the kids here are relieved. They think Dad's off, though. And that's the thing. They're like, man, Dad should have. He usually would beat us after something like that, and he didn't. Like, they seem almost disappointed that he was just disappointed.
It's definitely an uncomfortable situation to read about, again, as an adult, where it's you have clearly one parental unit who's not well mentally. Like, he's like ignoring the fact that he's a plant, which is a problem. He's not well. And now they're by themselves while their mom is in Tucson. Yeah. I don't know if you've heard, but Arizona is apparently not the best place. I enjoyed it myself. But
and to all our Arizona people. Listeners, it's a great place. We're just saying R.L. Stein hates
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Speaking on behalf of the author.
Dealing with Aunt Eleanor, who's dying, most likely. I have a feeling this is like a critical operation. This is not just like, oh, my back is pretty cranky. I need to have that looked at. This is probably like she smoked through one lung and her other one's going and they need to get two fresh lungs up in there.
She's getting a full neck transplant. It's rough.
This is rough.
Yeah.
This whole situation is rough. Like it's two young kids by themselves with the less well parent while the other parent's dealing with a situation that could end in death.
I know. It's tough. It's tough, and Dad is acting strange.
And the marriage isn't doing great, and now there's a lock on the basement door.
Now, that's
like, clearly
the worst.
He doesn't trust his kids.
Doesn't trust them.
He
does say, hey, well, I'll take you down there someday, but until then, I'm going to padlock the basement door, and I'm just going to spend more hours down there. Ah, rough.
So, Mom checks in. I have a feeling it's been a little more time. Right, like maybe a week. Like some time has passed since the incident, obviously. He's installed the new lock. Mom's been gone for a while. She's calling from Tucson. She's updating Margaret on what's going on with her aunt. And Margaret's trying not to bring up the dad stuff because she's like, she's got enough to worry about. And I could relate to that as a child because that is stuff that was always on my head was just like, oh, don't want to upset the parents. Everything's stressy and strange right now. Let's buckle down, everybody. Stiff upper lip and cry on the inside.
That's right.
And
keep it inside.
So, but she's like beating herself up about it a little bit. And then she brought up the stuff with how he's acting weird. So she tries to lighten it. And she's like, oh, he's wearing a ball cap now. And it's
yeah, he's wearing a Dodgers cap now. And that's a big deal in the family. Dad apparently doesn't wear hats all that often. That's strange. Not only is that the strangest thing, I mean, if your dad doesn't wear a hat and he's suddenly into hats, that could just be a midlife crisis or a balding reaction, but...
What if you do see your dad eating over the sink? That's weird, right?
Right, and that's what I was getting to. What if you see Dad just in the middle of the night shoveling food into his face, standing over the sink? Well...
Wait, my dad did that all the time.
I was going to say, not a weird thing. I would catch my dad rifling through cornbread. That was a thing. He would make a whole pan of cornbread and then wake up in the middle of the night and just eat it like he was having withdrawals. And again, we were very country, so cornbread was meth. Not metaphorically.
Yeah, no.
He just treated it the same.
What? Did y'all use the little blue box? Or did y'all actually make, like, fresh cornbread?
Fresh, yeah.
Oh, we were a box family.
That's okay. That? I don't judge. Hey, enjoy your cornbread. That's what I used to say.
You know, there's some people... I'm not gonna bless your heart this time. I appreciate that.
Live your life.
You know why I'm sweating? I just realized why I'm so warm, aside from the fact that it's warm in here. I'm wearing my
Wow, that's a Nicolas Cage sweater.
Sweatshirt.
Huh.
Sweatshirt, yeah. But it's like two sizes too small for me, so I'm wearing it like a long sleeve shirt, but it's actually very warm.
Can you not afford clothes?
So I'm dying.
Let's hope this podcast goes far. We can get you some clothes.
Yeah, that'd be good. No, but my dad was just as much eating over the sink. And I do, too, to be honest. Like, I'll get a box of cereal and just go over the sink. Tip it back.
Tip it back.
Catches the crumbs. Yeah.
That's a good place to eat crummy items. And, you know, he is much like you in the cereal. He's scooping something out of a bag with his hands. What could that be? Is it Doritos, you wonder? Is it, does he have a big bag of almonds? Maybe he's eating something that, you know, what would you not want to be caught eating in the middle of the night? Maybe the last of someone else's food. It's like, she won't know that I, you know, finished off this bag of tortilla chips, these 3D scoops that I love so very much, very salty. Won't know.
Just a big plate of bones.
Maybe from Welcome to Dead House Dream. No, she can't see. Margaret can't see what it is. He's just elbows and a hunched over figure over the sink. So after he leaves, she sneaks back downstairs, says, okay, I'm going to see what Dad was eating. This is a big deal to her. She's never seen her dad wear a hat or eat after midnight. He's like a gremlin. And she goes down there. She looks in the trash, which is pretty smart. Pretty smart for a kid to do this investigative work. This is more than most police do. He had been eating, oh my God, Dylan, he had been eating the grossest thing. Plant food. What? Ew.
What's even grosser about the plant food is at one point she says it smells like fertilizer.
Yeah. That doesn't.
And you don't want to think about it too much. Well, once you learn that he's a plant, then it's less gross than thinking of like an actual man chewing down on
just eating a bag of
bagged up cow crap.
Just eating a bag of manure. I mean, no wonder he was hiding it. Either way, no wonder.
Oh man, he must sweat that out during the day. It's summertime. Like he's just, his pores just
down in that basement. Ugh.
Dad, you smell earthy. I guess literally. I think that was a good cliffhanger, though. I think if I found out that my dad was eating plant food, that would be the end of my night. I would have to turn around and go back to bed and just call her quits.
Call it quits. Dum, dum, dum. Chapter 8. And now here, Margaret, we get a little insight into her reaction to the way her dad's been treating them and acting around them. And she tells Casey, he's so quiet all the time and so cold to us. He hardly says a word to us. He used to kid around all the time and ask us about our homework. He never says a human word. He never calls me princess or fatso the way he used to. So we get that to come back up again where it's like, you don't even like those names. You just miss having any interaction with your father, you poor soul.
Oh boy, I think we're working through some stuff with you on this particular episode.
Maybe.
But yeah, she's definitely, and it does hurt when you're, you know, my parents, like I said, when I was a kid, my dad was getting his PhD, so we didn't see a lot of him. And then when we moved up to New York, the whole reason we moved up to New York City was, so my mom could go to Tisch. So then all of a sudden I wasn't seeing my mom that much anymore. So she could go to school. So it's rough for kids.
Yeah, man. It really is.
When her parents aren't there. But, and then even worse, she's talking to Diane. And this is when we find out that Diane not only is not the best kid, but she's also a good source of information. So like, that's probably why they keep Diane around. She's a nosy little gossip.
Yeah, she's a lot like me. Again, always getting those rumors from the adults. She knows how to get the info, and I appreciate that.
So she tells Margaret, listen, my dad heard from some guy on the sales floor, which I don't even know. What town is this that, like, I kind of assume that her dad's like a car salesman or something, and they're like, yeah, so did you hear over at Polytech? Well, the brewer kid's dad set fire to the whole place. Like, boom. It's a weird... I understand we need to get this information to Margaret somehow, but it's a weird little town where just the goings on at Polytech are discussed by just the local folk.
The local folk, yeah. And apparently somebody died.
Now, was it a human that died? And here's the other thing. What if the person who died in Dr. Brewer's lab was Dr. Brewer, and it's always been a plant, my friend?
Oh my gosh, a plant and a plant. Interesting.
there's never been a Dr. Brewer. Well, there was, because
there was at one point.
This isn't like Octodad. I don't think you can just like bop a human woman and a couple human children pop out if you're a plant, or like,
I'm not sure how that works actually. I'd have to do some research.
Think about that. Think about that, Travis. I think the dad's always been, I'm always trying to find the extra layer of horror in these, where it's just like, if like in the last book, like if the parents had died.
I like that. No, you're right. I mean, yeah. What if? Your what ifs are very often about parents being dead, but, which is interesting about you, you know, dad, the rumor going around, this derogatory rumor going around is that dad, he's a mad scientist. Okay. He's a mad scientist. That's what people are calling him. Oh gosh. He's like a boss in Mega Man. He's a mad scientist. Ugh. Well, they go to playing Frisbee, and on the way back inside, they spot Dad outside. Casey throws a Frisbee toward him, trying to goof around with Pop. Dad, can't go Frisbee, Dad.
Well, they used to play Frisbee.
They used to.
That was something they used to do together. That was like how they used to bond.
They used to before, I guess, either Dad died or before he became a fanatic about plants.
That was no accident. The plant set the fire. Hit the body. Nothing left.
Jeez.
Just bones.
You need to write follow-up short stories to these. I would love them. But this rogue Frisbee that Casey launches knocks off Dad's hat, which I got to say, pretty good shot. That's a pretty good shot. Yeah. You know, 9 times out of 10, you can't even do that if you tried. But this reveals that Dad's head, he doesn't have the, I don't know what he had before. I don't think they describe his hair, but he didn't have the long, luscious locks he used to have. Now he's got leaves sprouting out of his head instead of hair. Leaves! He's a vegetable. I mean, he's not medically. I mean, maybe.
Yes, medically. No, not medically. Well, medically, yes, technically he would. Scientifically, he is. Well, no, because a vegetable is now vegetable is the worst word you could have picked, because vegetables could be anything.
It can't be anything. Anyway, dum dum dum. Chapter 9. Now Dad's got to explain. He's got to explain this away. Why does he have leaves for head? Leaves for hair.
Leaves for head?
Whatever.
Leaves for
why's he got a veggie head? So he's got to explain what's going on, you know? Okay. They ask him questions. They say, all right, Dad. Or he actually lets them ask him questions. He says, come on.
Yeah, no, he's actually setting them down to tell them what he's doing. And what he's telling them is that he's a mad scientist with no respect for morals or ethics. Because what he says is horrifying. Like, everything that he says is bad. Like, it's kind of funny because it's, by the end of the book, it's just like, huh, he was just misunderstood. He has these great ideas, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, so I made this first plant-animal hybrid, and it was suffering and pain because it wasn't meant to exist. So I was like, let's make some more. And I just kept making them, and I filled a whole closet with these just hideous rejects of man and nature melded. They screamed for pity and mercy, and I gave them none. But if you have any more questions, come to Dad.
Yeah.
It's bad.
It's not.
You are a scientist, sir. What would you say about this little setup in suburbia that we've got going on here?
You don't take the science home with you, man. You just don't do it. You leave it. You leave it at the office. That's what I always say. I come home and do podcasts.
At least pre-COVID.
He should have. He should have just started a podcast. He'd have been much, much, much better off. But they do ask him about some of the stuff they saw down there, and they go, "What about those booths down there? You trying to do a Bill and Ted Excellent Adventure thing down there? What's going on with them booths?" And apparently it's a way to transmit and send cells from supposedly humans to plants, creating them or forcing the plants to become a bit more animated and personified by, I guess, they're infusing them a little bit with human qualities.
I don't want to say that R.L. Stein borrowed a plot element from a movie and then just kind of stuck it in here and hope that no one would notice, because he kind of doesn't really explain too much about what these teleportation pods do, where DNA from two different species gets melded together and creates a horrific scientific abomination that must be destroyed by Gina Danis at the end of the movie. But I think he borrowed that a little tiny bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm saying he borrowed elements from The Fly and then disguised the fact that the dad made a teleportation device by not really explaining the teleportation device as much as DNA. Like, most of that was, like, biological. And then he's just like, oh, yeah, and then I have this machine that... and that's how you get animal plants.
Yeah, probably just didn't want to over-explain it to the young audience.
I thought the DNA genetic stuff was actually pretty good dumbed-down version of how genetics works for kids.
Yeah, he did a pretty good job. I do like one part in this chapter where, Dad gives them a chance to ask him questions and interrogate them and get some answers out of him. But we don't get all of the they aren't able to answer all the questions that we want answered, and that's kind of frustrating for the reader. But R.L. Stine makes up for it by having Margaret think about and sort of lament not asking the questions that she should have asked later on. And so she's kind of thinking to herself in bed, and she's like, "Wait a minute, I should have asked him why they were moaning and why did they sound like they were breathing and why did one grab Casey and what animal was Dad using, and why are you gulping down plant food?" And it's like, oh, thank God that we didn't just gloss over all that, because the whole time I was like, ask Dad about the plant food!
Well, what's great is, like, it's, like, clearly, like, the dad was railroading them, and he's like, oh, I'll explain just enough to get them off my back, and maybe they'll stop trying to sneak into the GD basement. I don't understand what's so fascinating about the basement. But, I think that was smart of R.L. Stine for the reason that you basically just said, because I think the reader would be like, wait, what just happened? And it's like, they got railroaded. Like, the dad was just like, oh, yeah, no, don't you worry. Like, blah, blah, blah. It's like the person who's, like, walking you out the door before you realize that you've been walked out the door.
Yes.
And he's like, and you take care, and we'll call you. And he just slams the door right behind them.
Exactly. And you know what? Those questions, they linger longer. Nah, this is the callback last episode. Linger longer in Margaret's head. She can't really sleep. And so she hears Dad come up the stairs. He's got to do his 2:30 a.m. tinkle, which I don't do. I pee just once a day, whether I have to or not. I have a massive bladder. But I hear a lot of dads are waking up in the middle of the night and peeing these days.
I think you need to get that checked on. Like, I'm worried about your mental health, your physical health. Like, you need to talk to Caleb about kidney stones, my friend, before you're like, oh, I just pee 3 times a year.
I drink tons of water, though. Tons of water. Just a massive bladder. I'm mostly bladder. But anyway, he gets up. Okay. He's got to go, let the plant water out at 2:30 a.m. And she hears him and she goes, she gets up some courage and she says, I'm going to go ask him about the plant food at 2:30 in the morning while he's in his underwear after a long pee, manly half awake pee. I'm going to do it. And she peers inside the bathroom, which you should never do when your dad's peeing. And she sees that he's facing the mirror and he's got his big old leafy green hand and the bandage on his hand is oozing. Wait a minute. Green? Dad doesn't bleed green. Last I remember, he was at the foot of the basement steps bleeding red like any other human. What the hell?
And she runs.
Yeah, she runs. She goes back to her room and thinking, I don't know, I don't think R.L. Stine articulates this, but maybe thinking, she was half awake and just saw green bleeding daddy. And that wasn't really what she saw. No way.
Dum, dum, ba, ba, ba. We have kind of another slow wake up to the next chapter. You know, they're starting to confer. Like Casey and Margaret are starting. We're starting the same process that we did with Welcome to Deadhouse, where siblings aren't necessarily on the same page, but now they're starting to compare notes. Basically, it's like, we should talk to Dad together, you know, figure out what's going on. She decides, like, so they have their moment after he of course scares her, because that's all brothers and sisters do is scare the crap out of each other. They're great for a jump scare. Your little brother is like, if ever a hand lays on someone's shoulder, it's like, God, there is a brother about to get punched in an R.L. Stine book. If you feel a hand on your shoulder, it's never a villain or a monster. It is,
yep,
younger sibling
always.
But so she's going to plan to, like, get up right up and early, get up before, why I keep saying get up like that? It's just over and over and over again. I'm just going to keep saying get up. So her plan is to wake up early in the morning before her dad gets up and goes down to the basement and just like, we're going to have it out. We're going to talk. You get your Folgers. I'll get my Sunny D and we'll get to chit chatting. But he's in the basement well before she can get up. He's like a shot from the bed to the basement, just like every red-blooded green-blooded American dad. So once she wakes up, she heads over to his bedroom and she's like, Dad, we need to talk. Not about the birds and the bees, about something else. Nothing. She doesn't hear anything. She's like, crap, I must have missed him. But she knocks on the door again just to make sure. Door opens and she sees parents' bed. But there's been kind of this theme of like, it's something's not right with the bed. Something, I feel like you might want to have something to read at this point.
Yeah. Because
there's a description coming up that is unsettling.
Yeah. Yeah. She's in this room. Dad didn't answer the door. She's in there. She creeps up. She gets close to the bed to where her eyes are kind of like taking in. It's like when you see one ant and then you adjust your vision and you're like, oh, no, there are hundreds of thousands of them in front of me. This kind of happens to Margaret. And so she sees the bed sheet was covered with a thick layer of dirt, clumps of dirt. Margaret stared down at it, not breathing, not moving. The dirt was black and appeared to be moist. And the dirt was moving. Moving? It can't be, Margaret thought. That's impossible. She leaned down to take a closer look at the layer of dirt. No, the dirt wasn't moving. The dirt was filled with dozens of moving insects and long brown earthworms all crawling through the wet black clumps that lined her father's bed. Dum, dum, dum. Dad was sleeping in worms, Dylan.
This, again, is something as an adult upsets me far more than it would have as a child.
Right.
Like, thinking about...
Ugh.
Just thinking about the mess and like, well, there goes... The memory foam pad under that's just cool. That's a lost cause right there. That's $150 right out the door. Like,
it's so funny.
It's not even like this is scary. It's just more like, oh, the cost.
Dude, I thought the same thing. I was like, as a kid, I would have thought that was, you know, creepy and weird. And I would have been like, oh, weird, gross, and turn the next page. I had to stop on that page and just kind of think like, how do you clean that up? I was thinking, like, I guess you get somebody else, you grab both ends and just kind of like carry the whole blanket out and just toss, you know, just kind of springboard it, trampoline it off the porch.
No, you're going to throw those sheets away. You can't wash those sheets.
Oh, yeah, but you got to dump the dirt out and then throw the sheets away. I don't know. There's like a whole process I was thinking of.
Yeah,
some dirt's going to get in the carpet. You probably got a high pile or a shag. Your carpet cleaner just going to smear that in the mud. You're going to have to get a shampoo or probably have to call a professional.
Exhausting. It's just, and not even talking about the insect, they're going to get into the walls, they're going to breed, they're going to lay eggs. It's just going to be the worst. I don't want to have to deal with this anymore. Like, just burn the house down. So I that was my first thought. And the other thing, I don't know if you ever saw the TV show, the live action Bumpers show.
Yeah. I mean, some of them.
So I maybe saw like two or three episodes. We might have to like talk about the show at some point because I would love to watch some of that
because I
really didn't get to experience it. Yeah. But one of the scenes, it was probably in the commercials that I do remember, is that scene of her opening the door and seeing the bed filled with worms. And of course they have like something underneath the dirt that's making it like writhe more. It's like, are those like fist-sized worms that are like roiling the soil? But it was that, I think that was like a good choice for like an early Goosebumps live action episode too, just because that visual is pretty striking even in real life. Cause sometimes like they'll describe something in the book that like, oh, if you actually saw leaves coming out of someone's head, I don't know if that would come across as scary as much as like kind of goofy.
Right.
Whereas like a bed filled with dirt and bugs is more visceral visually, and
exactly,
when you can see it.
Yep, yep. I would be down for a bonus episode sometime. We should plan that out. That sounds like a Patreon perk at the very least. But anyway, you know, we've dealt with that. Now, Margaret, later that morning, Margaret, still brave, apparently, wanted to go talk to her muddy, wormy dad. But he's downstairs in the basement. He's not answering the door. And old Casey, he does what any young boy does, wakes up late. Summer, he doesn't have to be up for school. He wakes up late. And Margaret takes him outside to talk. And here they level a little bit. And she says she told Diane about all of this. Confided in old Diane, the worst human in the book, worse than Dad. I hate Diane. And Diane wanted her to call the cops. Diane was like, call the police on your plant-like father. He's probably dealing weed. He's probably a weed dealer. She didn't say any of that, but I imagine that's what Diane would say. But Margaret stands firm. Dad did nothing wrong. You know, being a mad scientist, you know what? That's not illegal. Now, I got news for you, Margaret. It is. Stanley Milgram, some of the Stanford studies, you know, the was it Tuskegee? A lot of bad scientists. You can go to jail. There's a number of them from the 40s in Germany that didn't pan out well.
Yeah. It's not great. It's not a good look to start going down that road of talking about mad science as not being a legal, Margaret, because then you start talking about some really questionable things down the line.
Mm-hmm. You saw the direction I was headed. It's not great.
We're gonna do a little bit of a Yui and get it back away from.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's take a Yui.
Kids want to get a hold of Mom. Let's get in touch with Mom. Let's call Mom, not the cops.
Yeah, Mom knows what to do. She knows how to settle Dad down. Like, there's those weird days where he's like seems kind of cranky at night, and then they go off and they wrestle, and he seems much better after. So Mom's good at working with Dad, figuring out what's going on, and. But she's not there. Aunt Eleanor is on her fifth or sixth surgery. She's had all three of her kidneys taken out, put Jesus. Back in, put her spun
brain,
around.
Had her brain and her kidneys swapped.
Exactly. They had to rotate her eyeballs. Like, it is just, there's not much left of Aunt Eleanor that used to, like, that was Aunt Eleanor. You know, it's all just, like, fiberglass and steel at this point. But, and on Eleanor's great smile and winning personality is still there too. So it's
you know what they should do though, Dylan. So they should put Eleanor in the old zapper, put her into a plant, and preserve her life longer. That would make her last a little longer. You know, take away, put her mind into a plant. She doesn't need those human organs that are constantly failing. She could be downstairs moaning and groaning in the basement with worms.
I'm going to say something that I don't believe has any basis in fact, and I think is actually wildly incorrect, but plants don't get cancer. So that would be a perfect solution for her, is just to become a plant. No more cancer, no emphysema. Well, these plants breathe, though.
Yeah.
I feel like he's taking plants and giving them weaknesses. He's like,
kinda.
Plant, have some lungs. Plant. Feel pain. It seems like a bad idea.
It does. I think plants do feel pain, but keep moving. Yeah. What are we doing?
That's true. They probably interpret pain as we're on hour three. So they basically just kind of resign themselves to just hanging back and hoping that Dad's going to level with them eventually. But instead, he decides to make them lunch. And what I do like about this is how many times they're like, Dad never makes lunch. It's
exactly.
Like, who is your father? Does he ever take care of you? Dad does not even know where the butter knives are. Like, he's just, we're lucky to eat while Mom's gone.
I can kind of relate to this. My dad cooked a lot after he retired, but when I was a kid, if, like, maybe before the age of 12, if you'd have told me, like, hey, Dad made lunch, I'd be like, oh, no, thanks. Because that meant it was probably like a potted meat sandwich or like something like I didn't, like, I don't want to eat Dad food. Dad was like, come here and get you a can of sardines. Like, no, Dad, we don't have to eat like we're still in Vietnam. We have food in the house. I know what you went through. You eat you. I'm going to get me.
Oh, God. There was a point when I was in high school and my dad got into like corned beef.
Oh, yeah,
and just
dude.
Frying up a big old pan of corned beef hash to throw on.
I love, I
can
love
smell
beef.
It. It is in the back of my nose still, like the smell of fried corned beef living in my sinuses somewhere.
These kids wish their dad made them potted meat and corned beef sandwiches because plant dad.
You don't think they wanted green gooey mashed potato?
Which is essentially what he made. He makes some green pasty ass mashed potato substance, you know, plant stuff. And he tells them, he's like, hey, your mom called, and I think Aunt Eleanor is doing better, and mom might come home soon. You know, and he's real creepy about it. And it's like, all right, Dad, you're being a little strange. And then he makes them eat this stuff. This is tough. This was a tough part to read, because I've also not wanted to eat things that my parents wanted me to eat before, and just having to do that thing where you turn off your nose so that you don't taste what's in your mouth to get it down. I felt like that's what they were going through, to just get through what Dad has delivered here. He wants them to. He insists. It wasn't like he made it for him. Was like, what, you guys don't like it? Oh, that's too bad. He was like, eat the food. Come on.
Yeah, because he's eat it. He wasn't talking to them. He started off being like, hey guys, look what I made you. It's I'm not even gonna tell you what it is. Boom, boom. You're welcome. And they're like, we're all good, Dad. Thanks. And he's like, no, you will eat. I'm like, okay, Dad, we're good. And he's like, no, you will eat. It's like the stuff. Did you ever see this?
Did you ever see the stuff? Yeah.
Just like the stuff.
Yeah. Green stuff. Mm. Ugh. Green stuff. Thankfully, the kids are rescued because the friggin' doorbell rings and distracts Dad, and the kids are like, oh, let's get to the trash can. They empty their food into the trash. Smart move.
I do like that Margaret had to come up with this idea, and she's just like, hurry, help me out. And Casey's like, I don't know what we're going to do about this, old Maggie. And she's like, we're going to throw in the trash. Come on, let's go. Like, what are you talking about?
He's like, what are we going
to show? What do we do with food we don't like? We're children. We know what to do with food we don't like. You lift up the top layer of trash in the garbage can, dump it, and then lower it. And so when they check the trash, because you're a picky eater and they know that you don't eat, they'll just see more trash.
That's right. Now, I didn't know that was a trick. I was not a picky eater growing up, but my daughter is becoming picky, and now I'm going to be a step ahead of her. Thank you, Dylan.
Mm-hmm. Check your trash can.
Check the trash can. At the door, though, is it Mom? Nah, it's not Mom. It's Mr. Martinez, Dad's old boss from Polytech. Wait a minute, Dylan, earlier in the book, Dad was fired from Polytech. Why would his old boss show back up?
You know what? I hope that we get some dialogue to explain this, because, like, obviously, like, Dad must have left on bad terms. He killed someone, maybe, maybe not. Might have been him. Burned down a whole building, like, punched out a cop. Diane's spreading rumors, and they're not pretty. But it turns out that Mr. Martinez actually liked his work, thought he was on to a big breakthrough, and yes, he is. He's committing atrocities, but yes, progress is made.
Sure.
And says, like, you know what? Don't worry. I'm going to try and talk everyone back up. The funding we could get off of you. Listen, Polytech needs people like you. Polytech also sounds like an evil company from, like, an 80s movie.
It does.
Like, this would be the movie, like, the company that Sarah Connors has to break in to stop. Mm-hmm.
It sounds generically evil, and that's how I would describe it. And apparently, there is a bit of a weird circumstance as to why Mr. Martinez even shows up. His car is in the garage nearby. You remember back in the 90s when cars sometimes just didn't work? His car didn't work, and it was in a garage nearby. And so he's like, hey, I'll just stop in and see how Dr. Brewer's doing. And they had, like you said, they had the whole conversation, like, I didn't mean, it's too bad you had to go there, bud. I mean, you killed somebody. It's just the way it goes.
Yeah, you break a couple legs in science occasionally, and you broke the dean's son. Let's be honest, you can't break the dean's son.
That's right. And Dad's a little weird about it. He's like, he tries to persuade Martinez to leave, but Martinez, he's like, no, Dr. Brewer, let me come on in. Hey, yeah, what you got going on downstairs? You doing some plant work? You doing some stuff? Have you killed any more men? He didn't say that, but maybe just curious to what Dad was up to. And the kids, they're like, oh, yeah, Dad. They do some fake burps. Oh, Dad, that was great. What was that? Just pure wasabi? Oh, so good, Dad. Oh, really? It burned on the way in and it still burns. That was delicious.
I can't wait for it to come out.
Yeah, Dad, that was
just wonderful. Like a jet turbine.
Yeah, the kids lie about the food. Dad takes Martinez down to the basement, and the kids decide the only way they're going to get answers about Dad at this point is to go back down to that basement, see it for themselves. They're going to have to come up with a plan. They're going to have to wait until Dad and obviously Mr. Martinez aren't down there. They're going to have to come up with a way to get in there and do a little bit more sleuthing. So not much of a cliffhanger here in terms of like urgency, but a plan is being formed. So think of this as a bit of a montage section. Bomb, bomb, bomb. Dylan, it's your favorite chapter, chapter 13. It's all yours.
That is my favorite because I have a bone to pick with this chapter. I have a bone to pick. Casey has a lock to pick. I'm going to say, I don't want to say that this is as bad as the tree incident, as we will forever refer to the tree at the end
Never forget. Dead House. Hashtag never forget.
But I'm going to call BS on Casey picking a lock with a paper clip in a couple of seconds. I'm just going to throw that out there. But apparently he learned from Kevin at school. Did you know Kevin at school who taught you how to pick locks? Or
No. And the only Kevin I actually know, I do a podcast with, and he's never taught me a damn thing.
Hmm. That sounds like Kevin's. You know, just in general.
He taught me how to be less funny, which is working.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I've noticed, honestly. I've stopped listening to all of your podcasts for the last couple of months because of that very reason. So Casey learns from Kevin about how to pick locks. So they go back down into the basement and things are different. Plants are bigger. Plants seem like they might be breathing harder at this point. It's getting a little close in this basement, and they're getting a little tense, and then all of a sudden Margaret hears Casey scream that one of the plants has grabbed him right around his ankle.
Oh.
And that's how we're going to end that chapter.
That's a quick one. We got in, then we got. Dum, dum, dum! Chapter 14. Oh, God, what was it? It's a goddamn squirrel, Dylan. A squirrel got him. Wait, are we in the basement? Why is a squirrel just hanging out in the friggin' basement?
I don't know. Well, you know what? Actually, I think we do find out. We do find out how that squirrel gets into the basement.
The window was open, but still, they seem to have a lot of examples. I remember they were like, remember that time the chipmunk got in down here and that possum and that raccoon? Like, they've had like a melange? They've had a lot of wildlife down there.
They've only lived there for 3 months, right? They just moved there, right?
I know, and apparently it's a freaking Appalachian petting zoo in there. But anyway, they hear...
Maybe they've been there for like a year. I feel like maybe it's been longer than that. But whatever, it doesn't matter.
Long enough for Dad to get weird. But then they start hearing banging on the wall, which, you know, banging on the wall, we've been over it. You know, Dads have good excuses for that. Now, Dad's not here to give those excuses, but let's go through the checklist. The house could be settling. There could be rocks shooting through the pipes. All of a sudden, raccoons could be playing dice downstairs. But it could not be, it could possibly be none of those. But they happen to find Mr. Martinez's suit jacket down there. Wait a minute. Casey, do you remember Mr. Martinez leaving the house? Why, no, Margaret, I don't remember that at all. Huh. Weird. Me neither.
And they find his tie, too, right?
Yeah.
Find his tie and in his suit coat. And I mean, that's a little weird.
Hey, Margaret, do you think Mr. Martinez was down here making out? No, Casey, I don't think that. Maybe it was just too hot and humid. Remember when you took off your shirt? There seems to be a logical explanation for us to why he might remove his upper garments and then leave them here. Maybe he just forgot. Oh, that does make sense to me. That's how I imagine that should have gone down. But they don't reach that conclusion. They don't, they're just like, uh-oh, he was murdered.
But then you find a man's suit coat and tie lying at the bottom of the floor. You think that your dad might have murdered this man just like he murdered that other man that Diane told you about. And then you all of a sudden you hear footsteps.
Is it Dad?
Coming down the stairs.
Is it Dad or is it Mr. Martinez in a big hurry to get a suit jacket? We won't know. Dum, dum, dum. Chapter 15. It's Dad.
Yeah, it's.
It's Dad.
But the kids, they're using their smarts They saw how that squirrel got out. And they pull out that window, they duck out, and they pull a quick one. They go, get out, meet him upstairs, and they're just like, hey, Dad, we're out back. Having fun.
Yeah, with like taking deep breaths and like covered specifically in dirt that he knows is only by that downstairs basement window.
Ooh, Dad!
Yeah. You know?
Covered in plants and leaves that are clearly moving and talking. They're like, they were in the basement.
Shut up, plants. Shut up.
No.
I'm trying to lie.
Oh, no, those are just the rhododendrons from next door. Oh, you know how rhododendrons always lying.
Dad sees right through it.
Yeah, because they left the door open. Which is funny because that's what happened last time.
Yes.
Last time he left his shirt downstairs and they went down to get it and they got it. And then Dad's like, you left the door open, you dingus. That's how I know you're down here.
I know.
They do it again. I'm going to say that Margaret, not as smart as Amanda was. I think Amanda was like, she was a special case. Mm-hmm. She's a little sharper.
Yeah.
A little quicker. Margaret and Casey, not as bright. We'll say not as bright.
Bit of a bumble there. Yeah, they don't shut that friggin' basement door. So yeah, Dad knows they're lying. And Margaret, though, she kind of waffles on whether she's brave or not. Sometimes she gets up the courage to just blurt out a question that she really wants an answer to. And sometimes she just stays awake all night wondering and drawing out the narrative. But she does bravely ask her dad about Mr. Martinez's coat and tie that they found. And Dad has an answer. Mr. Martinez got hot. He removed them off. You know, you guys have been down there. Pretty humid, right? Yeah, he was wearing his business attire. He stripped that down. I told him I'd take him to him tomorrow. No big deal. But also, hey, would you guys please stop going into the friggin' basement? God.
at this point, I'm kind of on the dad side because it's like, guys, you've seen the basement. It's not. It's the plants. It's still a plant. Like, just knock it off.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
It's just a greenhouse without. Yeah, it's just chill.
Let me unwind your genetic code and insert cypress trees into both of you, and everyone can be happier. Come on.
Yes, come on. Chapter 16. We get out of the house for a little while. Thank God it was getting stifling in there. Margaret goes out for a bike ride with fucking Diane. And then Dad pulls up. Dad rides up in the old station wagon, probably looking pretty cool. I'm imagining listening to, let's see, Shania Twain, what now? Yeah, maybe an old Conway 28 track.
No,
Tom
Petty. He
says he's going to get... He's Tom Petty.
Yeah, big Tom Petty guy.
We've already brought up Richard Petty. Let's bring up his brother, Tom.
Yeah.
Dad pulls up, says he's going to... He's like, hey, kids, I'm going to get Mom from the airport. She's coming home now. It seems like Aunt Eleanor pulled through, has four kidneys, all of them working. And Margaret's pretty stoked because she's like... I don't care so much about Aunt Eleanor, but I'm so excited that Mom can come home and actually make us a lunch. And Diane leaves. Diane says, I'm sick of your family getting things together. I'm going to go back home to my unhappy family. So she departs. So Casey, this is what I think was kind of like, this was suddenly an Archie cartoon where he's like, hey, it's windy outside. Let's go fly some kites. I don't know. I wasn't a kite flyer as a kid. It never struck me as fun.
This almost seems to me like a... But Dad, where's my basketball? I can't walk without my basketball. Like, it seems like kids and wanting to go in the basement and... But you know what? Casey knows where the kite is. And he can get it himself. This isn't like the basketball situation. Like he... But you know what? It's not in the garage. It's in the basement. And to be fair to Dad, if you don't want your kids to go in the basement, don't store their toys down there next to the genetic reactor.
Right?
So... Casey's just
right
like,
there with you.
The only thing we have to do today.
What a convenient thing for Casey to want at this moment is that freaking kite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he just, you know what? Jimmy's that lock. He's just our little burglar in the process. It's just as a sign of poor parental presence in their life. But they're looking for that kite, and In somewhere around in a back alley, somewhere in this giant basement, they found some old shelves and they're digging through it trying to find a kite. And instead, they find some shoes and some pants that they don't recognize.
Yeah.
And this is starting to be more concerning than just a suit coat. Like, this can't be Mr. Martin. But they've watched a couple of motion pictures and they open up the wallet. Take a look at the driver's license, and they're like, These are Mr. Martinez's pants. Or at least someone took Mr. Martinez's wallet and put them into these pants to fool us into thinking. But no, they're most likely Mr. Martinez's pants. And clearly he did not leave the house without his pants. But that lends more credence to Casey's theory now.
Sure, but I mean, logical explanation. I mean, it is hot down there. Mr. Martinez shimmied his pants off, had his shirt and tie off, and he just simply left in his Speedo, completely forgetting the rest of his clothes. And then Mr. Brewer said, I'll bring them to you tomorrow. I didn't even realize that we both went back to your car naked at the garage. How goofy of us. But no, now it's seeming more sinister. I'm on your side. Chapter 17. Casey's in disbelief that Dad lied. You know, Casey's like, I don't think to Margaret, and I'm making up this conversation, but I don't think Mr. Martinez was hot because I found his underwear and pants downstairs. And like, when I get hot, I just take off my shirt. Everything's cool. I don't think I would take off my pants. I'm Dad's son. I don't take my pants off around Dad. So I think it'd be weird if Mr. Martinez did. It's fine if that's what he's into, but I feel like Mom should know. You understand? Like, he's prescient. They're downstairs, and they hear some human-like groaning. And they think, that's interesting. There's a missing man, and now I'm hearing man-like groans from my supply closet, and then a thump, 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 thump. Wait, what the hell? Something knocking?
No, don't. Nope, you don't go into a supply closet that's rocking. Learn that the hard way.
No, you...
Especially not when Mr. Martinez is stopping by.
That's right. What could be going on in there? Well, they say, the supply closet, maybe Mr. Martinez is trapped in there. We should go let him out. Plants are still making noises, Dylan. It's a very uncomfortable sight down there. I'm imagining it's very low lit, lots of plants moaning and moving around, lots of thumps and knocking. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I'm not happy with the situation. I'd be happy as a pig in shit if I was actually there. Like, I would be so happy. I would just be touching plants. I'd be like talking to the plant. Like, listen, tell me about your experience. I would be having the time of my life, knocking children out of the way, being like, I don't care about your dad. Where's the plant man? Like, he's a unique organism. What's going on? But the kids are just like, we need to get into that door. Mr. Martinez has been there for a day, and it is very hot in here. And doesn't matter how many clothes you remove, you're still going to be sweaty and gross if you've been locked in a closet for a day. But there are 2x4s nailed over this door. Like, it's not just locked. There's not just a padlock that, like, Casey can whip out a paperclip and just work his magic. This is going to take some group effort. And they managed to, like, get a hammer and work as a team, just prying these bars off, just taking them down. I don't need to be doing these gestures as I'm doing this, but you know what? It's all for Travis. Just,
it looks good. Just no, it's adding to it. It's adding to your vocalization. That's very good.
Then they're just, you know what? They take those boards down. Casey's just like, bam, just take down the lock off the door. I don't even know if that's how they did it, but that's how I'm imagining. Just Casey shirtless, just like a Norse god with his hammer, and just bam, just bringing it down on that lock. Sparks flying everywhere. And they open the door, and it's not a pretty sight inside this closet. This might be the best part of the book, to be honest, what's inside this closet. So I'm just gonna just hear that creaky door open, and then just the look of these two children's faces, one of them holding a hammer that is glowing red from just the force of
the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, inside, they happen to see, as you were alluding to, some unsightly sights, plants with human-like features, which plants known to not have. So this is unsettling.
If for the audience, if you've seen the movie Alien Resurrection, Joss Whedon basically ripped off this whole scene from Stay Out of the Basement for the scene where all the Ripley clones are, who are horrifically merged with the Xenomorph.
Yeah.
Have you seen that motion picture, Mr. Terry?
I've not. I was just being agreeable.
It's fine. You could live your whole life and never watch that movie, and I think you'd be happier for it. So that's a good call.
So they're down there in the basement. There's some plants with some human-like features, And R.L. Stine, as he does a good job of describing those. We get a bit of banter here. "Look at that one," Casey cried, taking a step back, stumbling into Margaret. "It has an arm!" "Oh," Margaret followed Casey's stare. Casey was right. The tall, leafy plant appeared to have a green, human arm descending from its stalk. Margaret's eyes darted around the closet. To her horror, she realized that several plants seemed to have human features, green arms, a yellow hand with three fingers poking from it, two stumpy legs where the stem should be. She and her brother both cried out when they saw the plant with the face. Inside a cluster of broad leaves, there appeared to grow a round, green tomato. But the tomato had a human-shaped nose and an open mouth from which it repeatedly uttered the most mournful sighs and groans. Another plant, a short plant with clusters of broad, oval leaves, had two green, nearly human faces partly hidden by the leaves, both wailing through open mouths.
Ooh! This, creepy!
I love how this is already different from Welcome to Dead House scene, where, like, the people are melting, and, like, I had just re-listened to the scene where Karen is dying, and her, like, her eyes roll out of her head, and she looks up at a man, and she's like, "Thank you," with her toothless mouth, and just, oh, this is that scene for this book. I don't know if every book has scenes like this, in terms of just, like, this detail-rich, just, like, when are we gonna, what can you put in here that can scare a child that doesn't cross that boundary? And that's kind of the fun stuff about children's books is, like, you have rules and restrictions, so you can't go hard. You can't do, like, oh, let's do I Spit on Your Grave, but for children. Like, oh, why is that the example I came up with? That's awful. Ugh. But anyway, this is like he's just nudging up against, like, too much. But reading as an adult, it's again worse. Like, as a kid, this is, like, great stuff. It's like, oh, that tomato is just screaming. But as an adult, it's horrifying. Like, it's somehow worse reading his books as an adult and having an adult's perspective on these events and being like,
well, I can paint a more detailed picture with the clues he gives me now. Like, as a kid, I'm picking up on the colors and the tomato and some of the stuff, but, like, my mind is warped, and I see the worst of what he describes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's something as innocuous as, like, the plant food thing, where it's just like, it smelled like fertilizer. And he's like, oh, that's beyond the pale a little bit. But he sneaks it by. Like, he doesn't even say manure or anything like that. I think it's stuff like that, where it's just like, if you know about some, and just, like, when the guy's like, yeah, the plants were suffering. She's like, just slide that under the radar. Like, that's awful. That is awful. But yeah, so they see these monstrous things, and perhaps it's a little understanding that it takes Margaret a second to spy human legs, like, sticking out of this pile of stuff. And I'm guessing she probably thought at first, like, oh, maybe this is Mr. Martinez, but it's Dad?
Yeah. And that's interesting, because if you recall, Dad just left in the old station wagon to get Mom from the airport. Why would Dad be down here in the basement? And not only just in the basement, but bound and gagged by the vegetation. So Casey has to stop Margaret from trying to unfree him, because Casey is like, whoa, hey, dude, Dad left. We don't know that that's really Dad, which I think is kind of a... Because Casey's been a bit of the gullible one to some degree in this. I guess the both kids are. But it's weird that he would have that forethought to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't free that guy that could be our dad that we're worried about.
I think what it is is Casey was the one who's more like, you got the feeling that Casey and the dad were closer than Margaret and the dad, or that Casey really liked the dad a lot. Maybe more than his mom. And kids pick favorites, just like parents pick favorites, even though they say they don't. They do.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No, it's fine. It's whatever.
I didn't even have a sibling to compete with, and I wasn't the favorite. It makes you feel better.
I mean, no, now I'm sad for you, too. So.
Good. Well, you know, Dad had tape on his mouth. They removed the tape, and it's weird. He's still got that leafy hair. You still got a vegetable head, carrot top, but not like with orange hair, but like with legit, like if a carrot were a person, it would have green hair, right? Mm. I didn't have to go into that, but I did do that.
I appreciate that.
But no hat. No hat. So it's weird. Okay, where's your hat at, Dad? Dad says, you know, listen, I'm your dad, and the guy that you've seen as your dad was not your dad. That was a plant copy of me. I'm your dad. Okay? I'm the one who did your mom. And the other guy is just a plant. He didn't do your mom. He's probably not even met your mom because your mom's been gone. So believe me, the guy taped up down here locked in a room that was boarded shut. I'm your dad. I've been down here for days. Casey's like, nah, I don't believe that.
The dad's saying like, hey, listen, Mr. Martinez is down here too. Let's crack-a-lack-a, get out of here. We're gonna start a rumble. Margaret's like, all right, what he's saying kind of makes sense. We don't trust the other dad. Maybe this is a good dad. I'm gonna tie this dad. Maybe we'll get things figured out. And dad just like, once he's free, he stops talking. He's not just like, yeah, let's go free Mr. Martinez first, which Mr. Martinez is probably like, yeah, that's a good idea. But like, they're just like, they just book it. And he's just like, goes to the wood pile. Where is this wood pile? What is going on in this house?
It's a massive basement.
But he takes an axe and he's just like, it's go time. I don't think he says that. But you notice he didn't go for a chainsaw because again,
people are wet.
Yeah, people are wet.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's just they're wet on the inside. Yeah.
Full of water.
That's how I like describing people. It's like, oh, you're really wet on the inside. You're just gushy.
It makes me feel good that you said that. Like you're gusher. Wet on the inside too, Dylan.
Yeah. I think of people as gushers. Just fun little gushers that I can bite into and just... strawberry flavor fills your mouth and just...
Oh, strawberry. Yeah. So Dad has the axe. He goes a bit shining on the whole situation. He turns to face him with this axe. We get our cliffhanger. Dum, 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 chapter 19. Now, Dad, you know, earlier he was making a lot of sense. Untie me. I'm your dad. And now he's just staring at them.
Holding an axe. With him.
Dad.
Yeah.
Holding an axe. Dad, put down the axe. You've got leaf hair. Dad, cut it out. Mr. Martinez is over there like, nah, 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 nah. next, they hear some footsteps pounding down the steps. Now we're gonna have a real situation because it's Dodger Cap Dad back with Mom. So Dad did go to the airport. That Dad did, and he went and he got Mom. Now we got Mom down here. Mom is like, wait a minute, two dads, two leafy headed dads. So we got Dodger Cap Dad and green headed Dad. And what's frustrating, and not frustrating, but like the book, R.L. Stine just starts referring to them by head. It's like you got leafy-headed dad and you got ball cap dad. And this goes on for like pages where you're like, all right, which dad was which? And then I kind of lost track of which one I thought was the right one, which one I thought was the wrong one, because I'm just thinking about hats and heads. Mom is as confused as we are. It's almost like she's reading the book with us. She's like, who's a dad and who's a plant? Ugh. Dad, the dad shouts over and over, you know, I'm the real dad, you're the plant dad. I'm the plant dad, you're the real dad. It's a bit comedic, to be honest with you, Dylan.
It is basically every single sci-fi premise of like, no, he's asked me something I've never heard, but shoot him, it's that. So we have to get a moment like that, right? Like, you know, tell me something that only you would know. But we already know that the plant dad has the same brain as real dad, according to the dad that was tied up. He was like, it's a perfect copy of me. Well, not perfect. Not perfect, but pretty good. Good enough to get by. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. everyone's just like yelling at each other and like axes are just being shouted. It's very confusing. Margaret's just like, I don't know what's going on. And then dad from the closet. Dad, who is locked in the closet with naked Mr. Martinez, and I'm not going to look into the subtext here, but I'm thinking there's subtext here. Dad, who is finally free from the closet, he's like, Princess, you gotta believe me. And she's like, Princess, I know who my real dad is. Casey, grab me the knife. Because she's got an idea. And I like where her head is on this one. And so Casey's just like, here you go, sis. I hope. Oh, wait. No, he's a redneck. I've been doing the. Here, you guys.
Hey, sis, here you go. Take this here axe here. I hope you pick the wrong daddy to whack with it.
And then Mario just fucking sticks Closet Dad right in his arm.
Dude, violence. Goosebumps books, violence, shut it down. Shut the whole thing down.
Just shut it down.
What are we doing? Kids attacking their plant dads with axes? We can't have this.
And you know what?
Joe Lieberman? Where is Tipper Gore?
This is the cliffhanger too. So we're left for a whole half a blank page, not knowing why this insane child attacked her father with a bladed weapon. But it turns out she's using this in the same way that a mechanic would check the oil in your car. It's a dipstick. And it comes out red. And she knows that he has animal-based hemoglobins. And, why has he got red blood? He's red on the inside. But yeah, that was her plan. If it bleeds red, then we can kill it. That's Predator. He's human. Because she knows that Plant Dad bleeds green, and he was the one that she saw last. So,
chapter 21, our last chapter. Our last chapter opens up. A young lady has stabbed her, maybe dad, and maybe not dad, in front of her entire family and another dad that could be her dad or not her dad. It's a whole thing. Ow! He cried as the blade cut through the skin. Margaret pulled the knife back, having made a tiny puncture hole. Red blood trickled from the hole, which is a good sign. Jackpot. Or no, bad sign. You got the wrong dad. Red blood's bad.
No, but she saw green blood in the other dad. So Dodger Cap Dad, she's already seen bleed recently. So, and according to Closet Dad, they swapped before then. So she needs to figure out if Closet Dad has red blood, because she already knows the imposter has green blood. So she needs to see red. So she's going to stab Closet Dad first. Because if he's right, then he'll bleed red first. But if she stabs Imposter Dad, that's not going to tell her anything necessarily right off the bat. Because she already thinks he has green blood.
Right.
So if she stabs him and he's just green blood, the other one could still be an imposter.
Okay. It could be two copies. Okay. Very good. All right. Understood. So red blood trickled from the hole. Good sign. We stabbed Dad. Thank God. He's our real dad, she told Casey, sighing with relief. Ha, I've stabbed the real dad. Here, Dad. And she handed him the axe. Here, Dad, sorry I stabbed you. Here, take his axe. Margaret, you're wrong, the man in the baseball cap cried in alarm. He's tricked you. He's tricked you. The capless Dr. Brewer moved quickly. He picked up the axe, took three steps forward, pulled the axe back, and swung with all his might. The Dr. Brewer in the cap opened his mouth wide and uttered a hushed cry of alarm. The cry was choked off as the axe cut easily through his body, slicing him in two. A thick green liquid oozed from the wound, and the man fell. His mouth locking open in disbelief and horror, Margaret could see that his body was actually a stem. He had no bones, no human organs. The body thudded to the floor. Green liquid puddled around it. Leafy green vegetable that has collapsed. And died, presumably. Because if you're ever able to look inside someone and declare they have no organs, they're dead. That's a dead person.
I mean, I feel like the plants are generally like that.
That's a good way to tell, yeah. And then after that, they're like, oh, thank God, we murdered the imposter dad. Let's go get poor, sweaty, naked Mr. Martinez out of that closet.
It's probably the best night of his life, let's be honest. He's just like, can you imagine the conversations that he and Dr. Brewer had locked in that closet together for a night and a half. He's like, I told you to burn all those plants. It's like, listen, look at how great they are. Like, they're beautiful. And he's just like, you're crazy. Like, that's just probably just hours and hours of that, except their mouths were both taped up.
Yeah. What I don't understand is why Mr. Martinez had to be naked. I mean.
Yeah. Well, you need the kids to find out that he was gone.
I guess so.
And
but
maybe he was going to get put through the machine to make a Martinez.
Mm.
They were going to make a Martinez in the copier machine.
I'm confused if Plant Dad was like, all right, Mr. Martinez, it's time to take off your pants. Or if Mr. Martinez was like, you know what? It's pretty hot down here. Do you mind if I take off my pants? And then he got trapped. I just need to know why the idea to take pants off was ever a thing. But anyway.
I feel like Plant Dad the kids came up to him and they're like, hey, we found a suit and tie. And she's like, oh, crap. I mean, I have to take all the clothes off. And he went back down in the basement and just stripped Mr. Martinez completely naked. And he's just like, there we go. Like, he's still a plant. He doesn't know our customs or anything. Like,
that's right. He doesn't have shame. He doesn't have body shame. Well, by dinner time, this was actually a line in the book, by dinner time, things had almost returned to normal, which is, I mean, that's crazy. There was just, I mean, the plant dad being murdered, it's not, you don't even have to call the cops about that. That's kind of done. But the naked Mr. Martinez, that's going to leave an impact to everyone in the house. I mean, he's probably not going to show his face up there again when he has to walk out in front of the kids. Margaret's embarrassed. Casey's, everybody's like, oh, I'm sorry. I just saw a naked man. That I didn't know.
Well, except he gives him his job back. So apparently whatever their conversation was in the basement, it was compelling. It was very compelling.
Could be a bit of blackmail.
And then there's the charming scene where Dad's just like, now I will put everything out of its suffering, and murders everything in the backyard. Like, look, it is probably the grim, like, this ending is somehow grimmer than the last one, where it's just like he's taking all of his creations, his screaming, breathing creations, and murders them in the back garden. He's like, these ones will be mulch. I'll plant these, though. These ones are fine. After he's basically created new species and committed genocide over the course of 6 months of this aforementioned species, he at least finally explains everything that's happened.
He does. In the most matter-of-fact way to wrap up a book ever way. He's like, yeah, I was working on a super plant, trying to electronically make a new plant using DNA elements from other plants. Then I accidentally cut my hand on a slide. I didn't realize it, but some of my blood got mixed in with the plant molecules I was using. When I turned on the machine, my molecules got mixed in with the plant molecules, and one thing led to another. I ended up with something that was part human, part plant. And then Casey was like, ew, that's gross, Dad. Gosh. And then he said, well, son, I'm a scientist, so I didn't think it was gross. I thought it was pretty exciting. I mean, here it was, inventing an entirely new kind of creature. And then Margaret was like, but Dad, the plants had faces. And he's like, yeah. Yeah, those things I made by inserting human materials into plant materials. I kept putting them in the supply closet. I got carried away. I didn't know how far it'd go, how human I could make those plants. I could see that my creations were unhappy and suffering, but I couldn't stop. It's just too exciting, guys. And that's just kind of how he explains it. It was just like, I was just having fun. And then I almost murdered my entire family and created a bunch of copies of myself to take over the world. I'm sorry, God.
But don't worry, we're buying a pool table for the basement.
Oh, thanks, Dad. And then time passes. Margaret senses things are back to normal. But Dylan, oh my gosh, this book ends in a way that I know you love. I see you're over there excited. You're stretching for this. You loved it. Here's the last of the book. All right. So some time passes. Okay. It says, by the end of the week, most of the plants had been destroyed because, you know, Mr. Brewer went on his killing spree. A giant pile of leaves, roots, and stalks were burned in a bonfire that lasted for hours. A few tiny plants had been transplanted outside. All of the equipment had been dismantled and trucked to the university. Because again, Mr. Brewer is going to be getting his job back. He won't be able to terrorize his family. He can now terrorize an entire university. On Saturday, all four Brewers went to select a pool table for the new basement rec room, as Dylan alluded to earlier. And on Sunday, Margaret found herself standing in the back by the garden, staring up at the golden hills. It's so peaceful now, she thought happily. So peaceful here and just so beautiful. And then the smile faded from her face when she heard the whisper at her feet. Margaret! Margaret! She looked down to see a small yellow flower nudging her ankle. Margaret! The flower whispered. Help me! Please, help me! I'm your father! Really, I'm your real father! Dum dum dum! End of the book. Oh, that's tasty. That's a tasty ending, Mr. R.L. Stine.
It is. What did you think of the second book? In fact, I'm actually curious. I don't know if we talked about it. Is this your first time reading this one, or is this, or are you familiar with this one already?
I didn't read as many of them as a kid. So my first and only read through of this was for this podcast. So I have no nostalgia tied to it. I always liked the cover, always wanted to read it. I think I like the first book ever so slightly better. I thought this one was a little more comedic. So if I'm ranking it in terms of like spooks, I like the tone of the first one a little bit more. But this one had a much better ending. And when I mean ending, I mean like last page. Like the whole dad comedy thing was a little weird to me. I didn't follow it well, and it seemed like it seemed a little weird, a little slapstick. But that last page, that thing that he leaves you on at the end, it's like, oh, no. This isn't over. And it's going to end that way. Oh, I thought that was tasty and delicious. And as a kid, I would have really, I don't know, I might have been frustrated by that as a kid. I'd have been like, oh, but R.L. Stine, but now what?
I think they both had the same problem towards the end, where it seemed like the wrap-up had to happen at a dead run, where it's just like, oh yeah, they need to push this tree over. Like, and then you have that great stuff with like the they're leaving and Mr. Compton Dawes shows up again, and Amanda has the line where she's just like, I used to live in your house, and leaves. This has a very similar kind of, she's like, it's getting kind of a little weird and hairy, and then now it's starting to pick up again, and then you get that little tiny like twist at the end. But for overall, like I said, this is probably among like the, because I probably got like a couple of them to start with, but this was one of the ones I read the earliest and most frequently. And reading it again as an adult, more when I was looking at the synopsis, I was realizing that the book is literally go up the stairs, go down the stairs, go up the stairs, go down the stairs. Like that is the whole book is yep. They go down in the basement, they get yelled at to get out of the basement, and it's just like in the basement, out of the basement. Like it's just this constant up and down the stairs, which I don't notice while I'm in the middle of it. And again, this is a book I probably read like 30 times as a child, and then another 3 times as an adult, and I think I'm good for reading it ever again. And I don't ever remember being like bored by that or thinking that was silly or goofy. So nostalgia is kind of hard for me to peel away from this one. But I'd say I'd put them on an even keel. This is more like what Goosebumps is going to be than Welcome to Dead House. But I think I enjoyed the characters more in Welcome to Dead House. Like they felt like they had more person. Like I felt like Casey and Margaret were a little less fleshed out than it was to be in Amanda's head and see what Amanda was thinking and how she was dealing with things. And
I
thought the kids were a little less interesting this time too.
I agree.
But
yeah,
in terms of like the plot, it hits me in my feels.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all can somewhat relate to a basement or at least a room in your house or a room in someone's house you weren't supposed to go into. And and maybe the haunted house and the haunted town was a little less relatable. So I can see this one maybe getting a little bit more of an intimate hook with, you know, we all kind of have that forbidden area as a kid that you're not allowed to go to that makes this one really special. But it is a little bit slapstick. You know, when you get the dad with the leaves coming out of his head, he's covered up with a baseball cap. That's more funny to me than spooky. So
yeah.
But still a fun read. So I'm going to give it 4 leafy dads out of 7. I don't know. I'm anchoring 7. A lot of people don't do 7s. I'm going to do a 4 out of 7. 4 leafy dads out of 7. Where are you on your scale that you're going to make up right now?
On my scale, I would say that he's going to be fined and penalized before the ethics committee, but due to the lucrative possibilities, the technology is just going I'm saying like 10 million in grant money just right off the bat. Like just right. Like he doesn't even write the grant. He's just like, he just gets 10 million. Like the government is just like, yeah, it's the fucking plant soldier grant. Here you go. Here's 10 million. Get her done. Cause you did this in your basement for $5 and a gift card to Home Depot. Like I think 10 million is good. Let's go. So yeah, I'll say 10 million grant dollars is when I'm rating this out of a possible. I'm going to say there's $25 million on the table that he wasn't able to secure, but yeah.
Interesting. So a one out of 2.5, if you guys want to round down at home. Interesting. Okay, very good. Well, I think we liked it, and I suspect we're going to like most of them. These are all fun. So it was a fun ride for me. I enjoyed it. And I think that's going to wrap us up here. Dylan's doing his touchdown pose, so I think he sees that it was successful.
No, I see that what the next book is... Oh, the next book is like one of like the it's the first of like the legends, like the pillars of the Goosebumps.
Honestly, I want to say the next two are really, really solid, which is why I don't want to rank these first ones too high, because I know for a fact in my own head they get better than this. So if you guys would like to, please, Dylan, how can they email this friggin' show if they want?
You can email the show at wegotgoosebumpspodcast@gmail.com. That is right. It does not meet the character limit, but it comes close. And again, it is wegotgoosebumpspodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. And you can find the show on Twitter at Say Cheese and Pod. And that, Lister, in a couple of weeks, will make sense. Say Cheese and Pod. And please, if you'd like to support the show, support some other shows on our network, which is polymedianetwork.com. You can pop over there. We got more podcasts about movies and video games and all kinds of cool stuff. You can check out the website, and you can also head on over to patreon.com/polykill and find a tier that works for you there and help support what we do. Now, Dylan, I'm excited for the next episode. I could tell that you were. Please, the honor is yours. Let's take it to the back of the book.
While staying with his weird great aunt Catherine, Evan visits a funky old toy store and buys a dusty can of Monster Blood. It's fun to play with at first, and Evan's dog Trigger likes it so much he eats some. But then Evan notices something weird about the green, slimy stuff. It seems to be growing, and growing, and growing. And all that growing has given the Monster Blood a monstrous appetite.